I think we're ready to get started. Welcome here, guys. Our talk is going to essentially be our story with some of the lessons we've learned along the way. We are certainly not positioning ourselves as experts here, like we have it all together. Our marriage is not perfect. And if you're looking for that, you're out of luck. But we do also recognize we are speaking to, you know, this generation and our culture right now has what I've heard termed an epidemic of loneliness. And whether that be, you know, COVID, culture, technology, I think all these things have combined to leave us isolated. So we recognize that this conversation is really a high felt need for people. And we just want to also say that we are also approaching this under the good news of Jesus, that every season in our life can be used and is purposed to build Christ-like character and to draw us closer in intimacy with Jesus. And so that's the goal of everything. And that is, you know, possible in every stage. The question while I'm dating is the same as the question while I'm single or married. It's how can I know Jesus more intimately and reflect his character more clearly?
So we are not public professional speakers. We don't have books on dating or marriage. We just happen to be two people who met each other 19 years ago, got married for the last 18 years, and we still like each other, and that's about it. So we wanna just kinda frame this as in, like, we don't have like anything specific to say except our story. So we wanna just share our story and some of the things that we learned. And you guys don't wanna hear us talk because, again, we're not professional speakers. So we wanna kinda get you guys to ask questions. Because at the end of the day, you guys want your questions answered, not for you to hear us talk about our marriage. So that's the QR code. Apparently, everybody now knows how to use it. Point your phone at it. If you don't have a phone, then ask your buddy next to you or some random person. You know, this is a relationship talk. So if it's a opposite sex, you can introduce yourself. just kidding. And ask questions because we want to kind of get through our content, our story as fast as we can. And then we're just going to answer questions. I see 16 questions that came in so far. So ask as many as possible. We're going to try to go through it as fast as we can. So how we're going to do this, we're going to talk about our story, our singleness, our dating life, and our marriage, things that we learned from it and things that we'd love to share with you guys. And then we'll just kind of go into Q&A right afterwards. So that's what we're going to do. All right. So let's go.
So Ethan, Jeanette, we are living in Oakville right now. We have two kids. Our daughter's 15 and our son is 12. We've been married for 17 and a half years. Personally, I was in full-time ministry at the time. Then I was home with kids for a while working on recertifying in my nursing career, and then now have moved more into the philanthropy and generosity space.
So I'm also married. My microphone might be a bit too hot, so if anyone can fix that. I'm married to this person. I also live in Oakville. I also have two kids. And for the last 16 years, I've been an entrepreneur and I've been a hedge fund manager for the last 15 years.
So I grew up in a small town in a Christian bubble where really getting married young was the only option. I had people at my 10-year high school reunion who had zero kids when we graduated high school and seven when we met at 10 years later. At 28 years old, when I would go home, I was kind of an old maid and in their eyes, like, you know, what's wrong with her sort of thing. Oh, you're sweet.
Thank you.
But I also like had such a full life too. After high school, I went to Europe to nanny for a while. I went to Bible school out there. I traveled around, had a full university experience, felt called to China for a while, then was in campus ministry in Toronto, and then worked at a church as well after that, which is where I met Ethan. And, the person who I was when I graduated high school is very different than the person that I was when we met and when we started to get married. Like, if you're young and on the route to get married right away when you're young, go for it. I'm not saying that. But honestly, what I would have missed in that singleness journey would have been a whole lot. And during that time, I think God really grew me, gave me tons of experiences in the world and socially and all kinds of things that really shaped the person that I was. And I needed that independence outside of a relationship to really see that. I think our culture in particular is talking about what I deserve, the kind of person that I'm looking for, having high standards. You know, there's memes about not settling for anything but a 10, but it's like, well, would a 10 choose you? Like, do you have the same high standards for yourself that you have for the person that you're looking for? And if you're in a season of singleness, I would just challenge you to figure out, how can I use this time wisely and well to develop myself as a person, to develop my relationship with God, to grow in character, to grow socially, and to gain experiences so that I can become a person that is worth marrying. If my focus is out there looking for someone, worrying about how they are, and I'm not looking and being honest with myself about who I am and how I can grow, I think you're missing an opportunity in your singleness there.
So my kid, so I'll out Bailey, my 15-year-old daughter. I tried to get her to come to this. I even bribed her, but apparently hearing her parents talk about a relationship isn't something that she'd be interested in doing. And kind of funny that she, you know, when she hears about my kind of past, my history, she kind of calls me a loser. And it doesn't hurt my feelings, it's okay. But she kind of, the first person I dated is Jeanette. So I'm one for one. Apparently that's cool. I think it's cool. Thank you. I'm here all day.
100% success.
I like this group a lot. Yeah. But if I kind of think about kind of my back in my teens and in my singleness, I remember everybody telling me, like, don't think just about the person you want to marry, the person that you want to be with. Be the person that is worth marrying. And that idea that Jeanette kind of shared, that was ingrained in me. But, I mean, when I was single and when I was hanging with my buddies, you know, inevitably we would talk about, you know, which girls I like and which girls are interesting and what kind of person I want to marry, what kind of person I want to date. Like, that was part of my conversation. Then I'm pretty sure that all of you guys do have that conversation for those of you who are single. But when I think about me in the last 20 years, and if I think about me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and 20 years ago, I'm a very different person. So if I am so focused on the person that I want to marry at this specific time, when I was single, that is less important because both Jeanette and I are growing and we're changing and we're different than who I was. In fact, if I'm being very honest, when I was in my university days, like, I was really into music. I didn't really care about sports. I was one of those, like, orchestra people. So maybe my daughter is right. But, like, I was really into music. So, you know, I remember specifically my first year, I was telling my friends, like, if they don't play the violin, like that's a no for me.
I don't.
So the question that I would think about isn't necessarily like, who am I going to marry? Who's the right person for you right now? But first question, going back to what Jeanette said, is be the person that is worth marrying, you know, work on yourself. But the second question is, as you are looking, as you are discerning who you're supposed to marry, the question that I would ask you to question is this someone that you're going to journey with? Because your life is going to change. I'm 43. 42, 43, and I am looking forward to who I'm gonna be in the next 40 years. And when I was in my 20s, I thought that once you get married, like, you're static, you're kind of boring, you're set, your interest doesn't change. I'm pretty sure that those old people are really boring, they don't really change, they are exactly the same. And I really didn't think about my life after getting married or having kids. But in fact, that's not the case, and the person that we are in our 18 years of being married, like, we're so different. So the important question isn't, who am I gonna marry today? What kind of person is ideal for you today? But it's the question of, who can I journey with in this life that throws curveballs at you, where you have to figure out what you want to do? Is this person that I can journey together with? And is this person that I can grow together with?
Yeah, so fast forward a little bit. We started dating in January of 2008, and I just recognized that we're really dating ourselves, and there's probably people that weren't born then. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so anyways, yeah, I think so. Yeah, so we started dating in January of 2008, and quite quickly it became serious between us. I think our...
You made it serious.
Yeah, you're right. I think our first fight was about we're really different people, and when we were early in our dating relationship, we kept going from social outing to social outing to thing to thing to thing, and I'm super introverted, he's very extroverted, and I was just spent, I was exhausted, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And we had a little fight about what I would term our social life as
what
a couple.
Of people, I think that's kind of what I was saying.
Yeah.
Right?
And I don't really know except to say that what we learned through that experience is that our relationship is holistic. We are holistic beings, physical, emotional, social, spiritual, mental beings. And as a dating relationship grows, those things need to grow in balance. And it can be really easy, I think, and very natural for the physical and the emotional parts of your relationship to grow. And probably there's need for boundaries around some of those things, but some of the other stuff can be easy to leave behind. Are you growing socially? Do you know each other's friends? Do you like who they are at a party or in a crowd? Do you trust them when they're out with other people? You know, spiritually, are you growing together spiritually? Do you want to talk a little bit about what that looks like?
Yeah, like spiritually is like not like just about like, oh, are you guys praying for like 25 minutes a day, or are you guys doing the Bible study together? But it's actually, it's applied spirituals. Like when we are dealing with, I don't know, some situation at work, are we able to actually speak truth to each other? Are you able to share in a way where the other person can speak into it? When you are going through relational problems with a friend, or when you're trying to counsel someone, like, are we able to apply that? I mean, fast forward, when we have kids, right? We had to figure out, like, how can we actually be a blessing and teach each other, encourage each other, potentially even rebuke each other when those things are happening? So it wasn't just about spiritual practices, but it was more about like applying, being set of eyes to our blind spots, and actually learning to do that in the early days of dating is really, really important.
Yeah. I mean, I would add to that spiritual side too, like how do they make decisions? You know, yeah. Do I resonate with the way that you relate to God? Does that speak to me? Do I respect, you know, how you're growing in your walk with the Lord? Different things, but all to say that as you grow, as you're dating, all those pieces need to grow in balance, or something's kind of off. Some things need to be guardrailed, you know, and some things need to be emphasized so that you can see that together.
Yeah, I'll just talk about it. It's physical aspect of relationship is fun. And we all hear, like, you know, we know that. We may have experienced it. We may look forward to it. And that's fine. That's actually how God designed it. But if you don't guardrail those kind of things, especially for me as a guy, like, I can get myself in trouble, right? Because if we're just growing in one aspect, the physical part of our relationship, which is beautiful and what God has designed for it to be, but if I'm not actually learning how to be a social couple together with our friends, like, that becomes a problem, right? That becomes an issue. So as a couple, you want to make sure that all four parts grow together. I remember socially, that's another example. When we were dating, one of my big criteria was that when we go to events, like for work, or when we went to parties that my friends were throwing, I wanted to make sure that, like, whoever I date or whoever I marry, I would feel comfortable being in that situation, right? Inevitably, I would go one way, I would lose Jeanette on the other side. And I didn't want, like, at the back of my mind, like, is Jeanette screwing up with, like, some of my friends? Is she being embarrassing? I wanted to make sure that she could actually hold on her own. And learning how to do those kind of things, because relationships just not about being emotionally intimate together or physically intimate together. We actually had to work on the spiritual aspect and the social aspect as the other two naturally grew. But we, just because those two things are near and dear to us, and it does bring physical joy, that it's hard for us not to focus on that. So we have to give extra attention to the other two aspects of our growth. All right. The second, let's kind of, you know, for that first date, when we get that butterflies in our stomachs, and some, you know, you ask someone out, or they say yes, like, we get very excited. And for those of us who experienced it, like, you probably spent a lot of time in the bathroom, like, getting ready. You're probably trying on multiple different kind of clothes. I'm pretty sure that I didn't have a cell phone back then, did I? No, I did have a cell phone. But like, I don't think we had photos things. So like, you would be sending like pictures of like what you're gonna wear, and probably trying on a bunch of different things. Like, when you are dating for that first date, or the first part of the marriage, first part of dating, like, you're trying to put on your best self, right? All of us kind of see that. And we really want to hide some of those like dark, deep, like, you know, the things that we are ashamed of, like things that we don't want to kind of show our real selves. And we try to hide that as much as possible, right? It's kind of like a job interview. You kind of want to put your best forward. But how do you know that you're growing in your relationship with God, right? At first, you try to hide. You try to like show like, okay, God, you can only see me during church or whatever, but you can't like see the deepest parts of my, that doesn't work that way. And as we grow in relationship with God, it is knowing that we are so unlovable and so unworthy of God's love. But the cross shows how loving God is and how faithful he is to us. And that is how we learn about our relationship with God. And more you feel comfortable in how sinful we are, and more we savor God's love. That's when we are growing in a relationship. It's the same thing when we're dating. So whenever Jeanette and I have young couples over, I become very inappropriate, and I just look at them, and I look at the guy, I look at the girl, I look at the guy, and I go back to the girl and I say, hey, so have you farted in front of the guy? And they become mortified. And
as
I don't
do
know.
I.
Jeanette gets more mortified. But to me, that is kind of that's a kind of a interesting story of how we try to make ourselves like in our best self to the other person. That's why in marriage, if you go with the traditional wedding vows, it does say in sickness or in health. The question is, like, as you are growing in your relationship with the other person, are you still trying so hard to show your best self, trying to impress the other person? Or are you allowing yourself to be seen the way that who you are? And are you feeling comfortable being in your own skin and showing who you are to the other person? Because and that's something that I had to learn, because I was trying to impress Jeanette and only impress Jeanette and trying to hide all of my crap from her. And as I realized that she was seeing my weaknesses, as she was seeing my inadequacies and my faults, and the fact that she still like returned my calls and went on dates and talked to me and felt more loved by her than before I did that. Number one, that didn't make any sense, but that's how we grew in our relationship together. So we want to show our best selves to the other person when we were dating, but growth happens when you're okay with yourself, showing who you are truly to the other person, and allowing yourself to be loved in spite of those kind of things.
Yeah, so like I said, we started dating in January. Things moved quickly, and by June we were engaged. And during that engagement,
it was fast.
Yeah. And during that engagement, lots happened. We were planning our wedding. Both of us changed jobs. We moved twice. Did a reno. All in 3 months. And as we were also navigating the joys of being an interracial couple with our families of origin.
Don't ask us any questions about that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was rough. What I will say about that engagement period is, you know, I'm not saying that it's over at that point. You can't, you know, opt out, because you can. It takes a lot of courage to do that at that point, but you could opt out. I'm not saying that you can't. However, you are slowly in engagement, and certainly when you are married, you are starting to close your eyes. Eyes wide open while you're dating and eyes tight shut when you are married, both to other people. Like when we were dating, I was looking at Ethan's weaknesses. I was watching how others looked at him. I was trying to discern if he was the right person. My eyes were wide open to all these things. But once we were married for sure, and as we were getting engaged, my eyes are shut to other people, but also, and probably most applicably, my eyes become shut to his weaknesses. I will say, when you are looking for good, you will find good. And when you are looking for bad, you will find bad. So if I spend my days looking for his weaknesses, things that are criticisms I have in the way he handles himself, the way he treats me, whatever, I will find them. Undoubtedly, I will find them. And when I'm looking for those things and have those thoughts about him, that he's got this thing, this problem, this weakness, this criticism, I have those thoughts, they turn into feelings of negativity and criticism. And of course, out of those feelings come my actions, which are negative and critical towards him. Guess how he responds to somebody who's negative and critical towards him? He responds negative and critically towards me, and we go around a circle. However, if I am looking for good, I will find it. And my thoughts about the great things that I love about him influence how I feel about him, influence how I act towards him in love and gratefulness and respect and kindness. And guess what? Somebody who's treated that way responds back that way. So if you want more love, start thinking great thoughts. It's something that you can train your brain to do. You can train your mind to keep your eyes open, looking for the good in other people. I mean, this applies to more than just marriage, but certainly in marriage, my eyes want to be tight shut towards his weaknesses and wide open, looking for his strengths, because I know that influences my feelings and influences my actions towards him. I think probably, I don't know, women in my experience.
Men too.
Okay. Yeah. I knew that, I think. But when we get together, there can be this tendency to complain about our husbands or to be critical about our partners. And I would just say, don't. It does not help you. There's room for therapy. There's room for deep conversation that's going for a purpose. But just to get together and complain about your partner or your spouse, like, just don't engage. It's not worth it. It's not helping you. And it's not training your brain to look for the good.
So we got married in October of 2008. So we've been married for 17 and a half years. And there's only real one success or one secret to successful marriage. And it's just one. And it's really simple. So if you take your marriage and if you alone look after the other person's interest, your spouse's interest, and that only, and if the other person, your spouse, looks after your interest and your interest only, if you can do that, so if Jeanette looks after my interest and only my interest, and if I look after Jeanette's interest and only Jeanette's interest, then you're going to have the most perfect marriage in the whole wide world, and it's very simple. So if you guys want to write anything down, that's what you do. Just understand the other person's interest and their needs and just do it. That's all you have to think about. Don't think about yourself at all. Just think about the other person. And seriously, that is the secret to marriage. Now, that is the most difficult thing that is impossible to do because we are selfish. And, again, I've been in my life, God designed this marriage thing in a very interesting way, right? It's actually really good. God is good. Yes, he is good. So what we do is, as you realize that you are in a marriage relationship, I have never realized how sinful and selfish I was until I got married. And more I'm living this life in marriage, I'm realizing, man, I'm one of the most selfish person I've ever met in my life. And I think I probably in 20, 30 years, I'm going to realize, man, that 43-year-old Ethan, he was not as selfish as I am now. Because that is part of realizing how selfish we are. Wait until you guys get into kids. Like, that's another level of learning about selfishness. Mm-hmm. Okay, so two things. So in order for you to look after the other person's interests and their needs, and only that, you need to do two things. One is to be selfless, but the other one is to communicate what my interests and my needs are to the other person. And in the many of my friends and us ourselves, we actually have to learn that, because at least for me, and I don't know if any of you guys kind of resonate with it, we like to suppress, right? Like, oh man, if I bring this up, I'm going to sound petty and I'm going to sound selfish and I don't want to talk about this. It's kind of embarrassing because it makes me look weak by saying these kind of things. By not actually talking about this because you're afraid, it becomes a problem, because what happens on the other side is that resentment grows. And when that resentment grows, we expect the other person to be able to read us, right? Man, Jeanette, like, why aren't you getting me? Why aren't you understanding what I'm thinking and feeling? Isn't it that obvious? Because we're struggling and not being able to share, that becomes hard. And by the way, I look forward to heaven because we're going to be able to read each other's minds for the rest of our eternity. And I think that's going to save, I mean, that's why it's going to be great. But for now, on earth, we have to learn to communicate using words. And that practice will be something that you'll have to practice in marriage for a long time. When 4 months into having kids, so this August 2010 is when I had my oldest. 4 months after that, I started a business. And that business I am still doing right now. And just if you guys are writing anything down, do not start a new business 4 months into learning how to be a parent. It's not a good idea. But I remember having conversations about that, like together, but it was more of me declaring that this is our intent to do it. And if Jeanette kind of pushed back on this idea, I probably would have thought that that I was threatened by this, and I probably wouldn't have taken her feedback like well. And out of that was because I wasn't communicating and she wasn't communicating to me. In fact, I was thinking, man, I have such a great plan for our lives. This business, if it does well, we're going to do amazing. Like, why wouldn't she want me to have success and explore something new, right? By making assumptions and not allowing ourselves to listen and share, like, we probably had a harder time because of that. You know, if I actually listened, she would have said, yeah, no, like, so excited that you're doing this. I'm excited about the upside. I'm excited about what you're doing. I'm so excited you're actually going to be busy. But don't do it at the cost of being so stressed that your health is going to be deteriorating. She might have said, yeah, but don't lose out on the joys of actually raising our kids. And don't miss out on the joys of actually helping you. Don't be a backup guy who only does things when I actually have to, but being involved in the everyday of like being a present dad, that you probably will resent that. Those kind of comments, right, like, would have made our lives a lot easier during that first day. So, like, marriage is simple. If you learn to be selfless and to communicate, and that is part of what you want to practice even during dating, to be able to communicate and share your interests and your needs so that you get into that habit of communicating together.
The other major theme that I think we've learned in marriage is to celebrate our difference, and that we are better as a team than we are alone. Ethan and I are very different people. He's an Enneagram 3, I'm a 9. He's extroverted, I'm introverted. He's driven and busy and determined. I am a slower pace, I'm a conflict avoider, I'm introspective. Pretty much in every way, we are opposites. And we kind of sailed through the early parts of marriage. We didn't have a lot of difficulty transitioning or like adjusting to being newly married. And then we had a kid. And we were gifted a very spicy child from birth. And
same one, by the way. We called her a loser.
Since birth, she has been a handful. And yeah, we coasted through the early part, but boy, did parenting give us some bumps. It hit on all the things we held dear, like independence, you know, like being in the center of social things and being available to people and all those kinds of things. It really struck a chord. And we also realized how different our childhoods had been, which I guess we should include in, but we didn't. And we wanted to approach this spicy child very differently. Like the text sort of running through my head was, that's not how I would do it when I listened to him interact with our daughter. And we fought about how to parent her. We judged each other's approaches. We had resentment towards each other. And I can't really point to a specific time when that changed, but it did, thank God. I think he just miraculously helped us to understand and to begin acting like our greatest strengths, our differences were actually our greatest strength, and that this child was actually benefiting from the differences in us and his approach and my approach more than she would have if we were the same person. We actually would, you know, we can debate parenting techniques all day long, but we would have her in timeout and I would get frustrated. You know, I would go in there with her and try to negotiate and kindness and all the things. And I would get exhausted and need to back out. And he would go in and deal.
I was like this Asian dad who's like putting in the gauntlet down, yeah. The foot down.
And at first I would cringe kind of listening to that. But it came to a point where we would literally high five each other as we were going in and out of that room and dealing with her in the different ways, trying to remind ourselves that we are a team and that our differences are actually so helpful to this kid. Yeah, I don't know. I began to rejoice that we were complete opposites. And I think that obviously applies to more than just parenting. But yeah, I think a huge part of marriage is you start to see each other's differences. Mm-hmm. And the question is, can you celebrate that? And can you rejoice in how you are stronger as a team than you would be apart?
I'm so glad she's not here, by the way. That we probably wouldn't be able to use that story.
No.
Yeah. All right. So we want to get to questions soon. So keep asking questions. But wanted to leave before with one kind of thought that I could share to women. And Jeanette has one idea that she wants to share to men. So it's kind of weird, but we're going to try it. So when I was young, I used, when people were, giving speeches after, Peace Prize or whatever, or the Nobel Prize, they would always talk about how, they would, talk about their, wife as, this amazing person and how, they couldn't have achieved what they achieved without women, their wife behind them and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's really nice. I think it's just a thing that they say. But I really didn't understand why they were doing all that kind of stuff until, I met Jeanette and we got to live last 18 years together. So I'm going to just let you guys in on a secret. And again, this is not for everybody, but I, and maybe some men, we're not as confident and sure and able as we want to look, okay? We as men, we struggle with imposter syndrome all the time. And I'm 43. To this day, I still struggle with imposter syndrome. I have no idea why I'm standing in front of you guys. I struggle with that. And when I talk to people that are older and much more accomplished than I am, and they're way older, they also have imposter syndrome. So that's a little FYI. Not every guy's, some of you guys might be way more confident than I am, but that's what we really struggle with, or that's what I struggle with. But when I kind of think about the last 18 years, Jeanette's belief, love, and the support that she gave me, that when I went out to work, and not sure of what I'm doing and coming home and she thinks I'm actually amazing, that support, I don't think I could be where I am without that kind of support at home. And if I came home after not being sure of myself and Jeanette's berating me at night, in the evening of all my inadequacies, I don't think I could have done what I got to see in the last 18 years. And I think what I and some men, more than some men potentially, what we want more than anything in marriage, I think, is the respect of the women that they're married to. So I think that imposter syndrome is real. Again, I don't know if that's right today. I'm not even sure if it's appropriate to say, but we struggle with that a lot. So just how you conduct yourself in relation to your future spouse, your boyfriend, whatever. I think that how you conduct them and thinking the best of them. I think what Jeanette shared, I think it's really way more important than you probably give credit for, because I've experienced that myself.
to men. Yeah, I don't have a ton to say here. A lot of compassion. I think our culture is really hard on guys right now. It's really challenging to be a guy. I'm not going to go into that because I don't want to pick battles that I'm not ready to fight. But anyways, I think to you, I think women really interpret love as being heard and being seen. You know, as you get to know someone, don't assume that you know them completely. Stay curious. Keep asking what makes them tick now. How do they interpret this situation now differently than they did when they were, you know, 5 years ago or whatever? Be curious about them and remain curious and listen, not just for the outside, but listen for the under layers and keep asking and hearing. That's what really, if men want to be respected, I think women want to be loved, they say. And I would say, as a woman, I kind of see love as being heard and seen and appreciated. So,
all right, so we're going to go to questions. There's 28 questions this time. Sweet. All right, so we're gonna get to it.
Ethan made an app, and AI has...
I'm a nerd.
Yeah, he is. AI has grouped them a little bit, but I don't think their grouping is that great. No. So
we're using like ChatGPT-3.
Okay, so why don't you do this one?
Okay, the first question. Should I focus on my career first after my university, or should I propose to my girlfriend? All right, great question.
Do it now. Just kidding.
Okay, so.
That would be so fun if that happened.
Don't do it now. That'd be crazy. All right. So I think I get this question a lot, and especially today where, you know, I know the struggles financially right now, totally. And I get it, understand, it stinks. We can probably have another session on why our economy sucks. So we'll do that later. My question to you is, like, why do you feel the need to be successful or have a job? Like, why do you feel like you need
have
it all together before you get married? Do you think, like, doing it alone is easier than doing it together? Right? So I think a lot of guys, you know, or girls, they want to be established. They want to have a job. They want to do all this before they get married. And I would respond by saying, like, again, go back to that whole idea, like, your job is to grow together and your job is to be vulnerable. So if you guys are not having conversations about like, hey, like I'm graduating, I have no job, like that really pissed me off. Like, I want to figure this out. Like, if you're not able to have that conversation, then you're not learning to be vulnerable with your significant other. And two is, again, like you're assuming that the other person would want you to have a job, right? Don't assume, have a conversation about it. Right? And make a plan together. Like, I think we as maybe the guys, especially, I don't think it's just us men, but we have this desire that we want to be like all put together. And that idea put together comes from probably more of your ego, right? And good ego, right? Wanting to provide is a good ego, but probably comes from that. So I would just say, if God is calling you to get married, right? And if you know that she's the right person, then go for it. You don't have to have it all figured out and have conversations saying, I don't have everything figured out. By the way, if there are people in here that think that you guys have it figured out, but you don't. Then I don't have it figured out and we don't have it figured out. And that's the joy of actually walking with the Lord and walking with, you know, and having your best friend to actually walk that along with you because you don't have it together. So don't assume that you have to have it figured out. I think marriage works the best when I don't think that I have it figured out. And in fact, if I have it figured out, then you're actually blocking intimacy in that relationship.
Good job.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to this one, okay?
Which one?
That one.
Sure.
I think there's a few that are kind of similar. How do you know if this person is the right one for me? Great question.
Why did you choose that one?
I know, it's a hard one. I mean, okay. So I don't think there's like an answer, like it's not black and white. There's no timeline, like you need X number of months. Like I said, for us it was really quick. And we kind of, I hate this old saying, but if you kind of know, you know, as you are going through life together, watching how that person is making decisions, is reacting to crises, is treating their family, is if you are walking through those things together with your eyes wide open. Ethan and I really experienced a lot of life in a really short amount of time. And so for us, it was easy, relatively easy, to see that the other person was the right one rather quickly. I mean, some people can be in relationship for 10 years and not have tons of, like, life just kind of goes along and they don't have tons of those experiences where they can see how that person is in all those life's moments, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so they may not have as quick of a courtship, I guess, as we did. However, if you're going along and surrounded by people who give you good advice, if you're seeing all kinds of things and you observe their weakness and you still want to journey with them, I think you can actually really say, if you know, you know. And I will tell you my experience previously as well, because I alluded to it earlier, but I had another option.
Another option.
Like when I was quite young for marriage and...
like before me. Not
yeah,
like
yeah, 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 yeah. Not like, which one should I do? No, you know, no. long, long before you. Yeah. And everybody around me, parents included, was saying, yep, this is great. You need to do this. It was certainly the expectation. Objectively, that person was great, fine. But there was something in my heart that just could not do it. And I knew that whether the Holy Spirit, you know, speaking to me, whether just listening to my own self and allowing that to be loud enough that I could hear it even in the middle of an environment that was telling me otherwise, and made a decision that I can't move forward because it just didn't sit, and I'm so glad that I didn't otherwise. But yeah, like I think there is a little bit, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
What would you say?
I don't love that quite answer, because if you know, you know, that's hard.
It only applies to people who know.
Yeah,
so
it's hard.
It's hard on the outside.
Well, because then I'm going to go to the other question, like, you know, the if you feel a sense of chemistry and connection with someone but don't know if you're the right one after being friends for so long, like, I think we kind of want to, like, be sure, right? And some of us who are cautious will be like, I need to be absolutely sure before making a commitment, right? And if some of us were not, then be like, oh, yeah, we're sure, and we're probably taking the wrong cues. So I know discerning is the hardest part, but I think if you are thinking about a person that you want to journey with and actually going through life experiences together to know that, like, you know what, like, they don't have it all figured out, but I think we can compatibly make decisions together. You know, they don't have to be sinless and perfect, but hey, when they screwed up and I brought it up, they responded with, you know, repentance and wanting to talk about it. Like, that's good. Like, that kind of compatibility, I think that's what you want to test, not just time and comfort. You know, you want to marry someone just because, like, oh, she's a comfortable person. You know, like, you don't want to do that. But I think if you want to learn, like, discerning the journey, like, who you want to journey with, I think that that question becomes a bit easier. Do you want to answer this one and this one together? That one and that one.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to read it?
If they see me as someone having a journey with, but feel like they don't want to hold emotional expectations and responsibility, what's really holding them back? How can I navigate being with them? And then, should we need to have the title of boyfriend and girlfriend if we like each other and want to get to know each other and grow, but not yet ready for the expectations that are held in marriage? That second one, you don't have the expectations of marriage. You are just boyfriend and girlfriend. And whatever you call it, I think doesn't so much matter. Your expectations are that you are trying to see if this works, and it may not, and that is okay.
I'm gonna sound like a boomer here and say, I don't know why you guys have such a hard time, like, labeling things. I know that sounds scary. So, like, I mean, if you guys look like your boyfriend, girlfriends, and if you're not labeling it, I'm like, you guys are still boyfriend, girlfriends. So, like, and you're not committing, like, you know, like, boyfriend and girlfriend is still a low bar. Like, you can leave. So I don't know why, like, why are you acting like it's a marriage when it's not a marriage? So I mean, I think it's a matter of definition thing. So if you guys are in a relationship, okay, so like, let's be definitional. If you guys are exclusively seeing each other with the idea of potentially being even more committed for the future, and one day you guys want to be married, have kids, and live the rest of your life together as best friends and have intimacy and all that, then you guys are dating. Like, you are trying it out. You're questioning to see it. So I would just push back and say, yeah, like, if you're a boyfriend and girlfriend, you're not married. You do not have a covenantal relationship in front of God to covenantly decide that you guys are going to commit to one another forever. Maybe I have a lower bar. Call me a boomer. I'm sorry. But that's how I would answer that question. Are we missing anything else there?
I think if someone is not ready to journey with you, if they're holding back.
This one too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just time to have a conversation. I don't think you can navigate being in relationship with someone who's not going there with you.
No.
You can't, I mean, you can try and have the conversation, like, what is holding you back? What is stopping you here? I feel like, you know, I am being more vulnerable with you than you're being with me. I feel like we're outpacing each other here. Like, we're not evenly matched. Mm-hmm. You have that conversation, but if they're not going with you, you can't go together.
Yeah, like, one person thinks that, like, God calls us to, like, date and get married, and the other person doesn't think so. Like, you may be reading it wrong, right? So I think that's what I would say. The other thing that I would say about that question, sorry, is I lost my train of thought.
Okay, next. There's
a lot.
Yeah,
we'll just go later.
Okay.
Wasn't very important, I guess.
Yeah. Which one? Okay.
How do you feel about relationship being between believers and non-believers, yet spiritual and open? Just haven't taken the last step of committing to faith. Junette, you can take that one.
Thanks so much. I mean, I guess it's a question of compatibility, right? Like, in marriage, if I am pursuing Christ, but he is not, I would say we are not, at that moment at least, really compatible. So if you are dating, I don't think it's necessarily wrong to date a non-believer per se, but I think you want to ask the question, are we compatible spiritually? Because that is a facet of your life. Can you have that conversation with a person? Can you respect their faith? Can you talk about stuff? Can you be challenged by them spiritually? Because like we said, I think it goes back to that idea that relationships are holistic, and spiritual aspect is a part of that. So, I mean, just ask the question about your compatibility together spiritually, as well as all the other ways.
Yeah,
is that?
I want to say it's a bad idea, but it's really hard. I would recommend against it if it was my kid or my friends, because it's biblically, don't get yoked with unbelievers. It's hard to. Now, you can hope that they become a believer, and I get that, right? And God can do that. I've seen that, but...
Risky, maybe.
It could end really badly. I've seen people where they're married and, you know, they're non-believers when they got married, and then one of them became a follower of Jesus, and I've seen how hard it's been for them. So I think it's hard. Again, like, I know I did say, like, you know, think about the journey, right? But there are a couple of things about the journey where you don't want to, like, oh man, like, they're going to become a Christian. That's not in you. Like, you can't force people to become a believer. And when you have a different perspective on the entire worldview and how you operate, it does become fundamentally very, very difficult.
Yeah. In that scenario, maybe, like, what's the rush, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can wait if you really think so. I'm going to answer this one.
Okay.
Because that's hard. All right. What does loving your wife like Christ loves the church mean to you? All right. So nobody asked what does loving your husband mean. So Jeanette's out of it. Guys, it's still open. To me, it is really that being selfless. Like, God, Jesus came to earth to die for their church. So that means that you men, like husbands, our goal is to die to ourselves. And it'd be easy if that means, like, you just end your life for God, like, for your spouse, because that's actually easier. hold on. Harder part is going to be every day you die to yourself and all of your personal and own desires of what you want to accomplish and choosing to serve the other person. That's way more difficult than just like, I'm just going to sacrifice my life for this person. It is in some ways so much difficult because you're not making decisions about one major thing. You're making million little decisions that you may say, oh, that's inconsequential. I'm the worst at picking up my socks. The day that I come in, my socks come off and it gets thrown to the nearest wall, right? And by the way, like if I am loving Jeanette the way that Christ loves the church, even that little act of I'm just throwing my socks because it's been a long day and it stinks. Like if I'm serving her and if I'm looking for her interest only, I wouldn't be doing that. I'm going to tell you that's really hard for me to do because I really like taking my socks off. Right? So I would say that's one. The other one is this whole idea of leave and cleave, right? So it's kind of interesting because it does talk about men like being leaving his family and kind of cleaving to something new, which means, again, we're dying to ourselves. We're even in some ways like giving up our family that we lived with so that you're starting a new family. So to me, that's what it looks like being husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church means that you are completely dying to yourself of your own desires, your own things so that you can serve your wife wholly, wholly until you are called to depart. I'm going to see if I'm going to refresh just in case.
Just, yeah, nope, off the hook. Yeah, I win.
All right, keep going.
Okay. There's a couple questions about physical boundaries in dating, so I guess we're going to go there.
Yep, sex.
Sex, yeah. Okay. So I probably am going to take an unpopular opinion and say that I really do believe that God intended for sex to stay within the marriage, both before marriage and certainly after as well. And I know that's not popular, nor is it easy. I will say that God is a God of love and forgiveness. And as far as the East is from the West, and freedom and shame, like no shame, and can renew and restore anything that has happened in your past. So there is complete fresh start and there's complete forgiveness. However, I do think his best is to keep sex for marriage. And when you do that, it is... there is beauty and there's freedom in it. And I think both people can approach it with that, with joy. Yeah, that's all I think.
Yeah, and I think for those of us, like those of you who may have like kind of had sex before marriage and stuff like that, I know it can come with like, it can come with shame. It comes with a lot of like emotional baggage afterwards. Like I believe God can forgive you and restore you and all that kind of stuff. So I believe in God who is grateful. But those of you who haven't and thinking about it, or like thinking about, hey, we're going to just cohabitate, we're going to be in two separate rooms. Like, don't put yourself into that kind of scenario where it's hard enough. Like, don't make it even harder for yourself, right? So have that boundary, go back to that idea. Like, you know, there's a physical, emotional, spiritual, and social aspect, and just keep that in check. You know, yes, like, you know, like, you know, we are horny people. It is true. And it's okay for us to say that. And for you to deny that, did I just embarrass you?
Yeah.
Okay. We just got to acknowledge it. And it is fun to have sex. It is that physical, like physical pleasure is part of how God designed it. But that physical intimacy between a husband and wife, and we get to enjoy that forever. Like, you know, it's okay for some things in relationship to be sacred and wait until in the future when things want to do it. Like, like raising kids. Like, I'm glad that I did it, you know, like a few years into our marriage, you know, like it was more important for us to grow spiritually and grow socially before growing in emotional and physical part of our relationship. And it's okay for us to do that. I know it's really hard. I understand. I know that it's exciting. I know that we are all built for it. And that longing, that physical attraction is part of being in a relationship. So I understand, but just wait. Like, it's actually more fun.
And there is this cultural, like, statement or whatever that you maybe need to check you of chemistry or something like
that. Sexual chemistry?
Yeah. I think that's very cultural. It's not God, right?
No.
And I think you have chemistry and growth in your relationship, and then out of that spills chemistry sexually. So you don't, if you have a good relationship, you don't need to test it out.
Yeah.
It just happens. I mean, and then sometimes you work on it and whatever, but
okay, that was our awkward way of doing that. So thanks. Okay, we have 5 more minutes.
Were we ever scared about getting married?
Jeanette, were you ever scared about being married?
I think we were really naive, probably. Yeah, and probably. I think God really protected us from, you know, like I said, we were quick when we got married. I wasn't scared, really.
No.
Because I knew you and I trusted you, and I think I knew that whatever happened, we would be in it together. So
I know people who have been scared, and they also have thriving relationships afterwards. So that worry is probably more your personality, so being cautious versus being naive, right, or stupid for us. So I don't think that matters. But again, it goes back to those questions, like, do you think this person that you are committing to is worth spending the rest of your life with? Like, your life is never static. You're learning, you're growing, your experiences has changed you. Do you want to do that with your best friend? Or are you just chasing to get married so fast that you're not seeing those kind of things, right? It's important for you to kind of, rather than thinking about being married as a goal, you want to find that, you want to kind of grow in your relationship, and marriage is going to be part of that. So I would just go back and talk about not worrying about the emotional kind of stress that comes with commitment, but just thinking about how do you discern, and that discernment comes mostly from just seeing how we react to the curveballs that life throws at you.
What habits should a couple start while dating that will strengthen a future marriage? I mean, I think, communication and honesty, forgiveness, like things that I think, you know, there's not a particular script that you have that makes for a future healthy marriage, except sort of those things. I don't know.
I would say have fun, learn to have fun, right? Don't be one of those like practical couples, right? Like don't like go through your daily agendas and just go through only that, because, you know, if you think like dating is hard, just wait until getting married and your life is fully integrated, and then just wait until the kids are in and you just become like executive assistant for your entire family. It's hard. So like, you got to learn to have fun. And part of our marriage isn't to procreate and manage a household. That's not it. Like the last, I mean, we actually talked about this about like 10 years into our marriage and 7 years into being a parent. Like, hey, like, are we just, like, do we need to date again? Because we're really good at like good colleagues. We're really good at managing our kids and managing our family, but we're not having fun. So I would say like have fun, like learn to have fun. Like those of you who are engaged, like if you guys are like planning your wedding right now, do not make every time you hang out as a planning time for your wedding, because that's not it. Like go date, have fun. Like have a day where you're like, we're not gonna talk about our wedding. Like don't like have those kind of times, because your job, your goal is not to get to the wedding day. Your job is to actually learn to live life together. And the second thing is learn to communicate. Like I still suck at it, right? Like every evening, Jeanette and I are like, you know, like kids are in bed and we're like, how was your day? I'm like, I don't care about my day. How about Jeanette, you tell me your day? But like learning how to share what you're struggling through, learning how to spiritually like talk to one another about what your life has been, like start that now, like communicate and learn the social and spiritual aspect in addition to that emotional and physical part. That's what I would say is a skill set that's really necessary. You don't want to be like 20 years into marriage and your kids are out of house and you're like, okay, I don't know who you are anymore. Want that to happen. Are we good?
I think we're done with time.
All right.
There's a lot of questions that we didn't hit. Sorry. But thanks, guys.
Enjoy.
so funny. Hey, look, this time nobody's coming up to ask.
I know. They put them all on their thing. They put them all on their thing, so they didn't have to. Okay.